All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck, and I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season, when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic, and no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com. If you hunt areas similar to ours, you probably have poor soil. You know, down here in the deep south, we are often relegated to planting our food plots on old logging decks, logging roads, power line right-of-ways, clear cuts, things of that nature. So you're often dealing with topsoil erosion and just poor quality soils. Well, there's a way you can improve those soils and get better food plots in the future, and that is Dirt Doctor from Whitetail Hill. There's a couple different things in this blend that are going to help out your soil. First, there's brassicas. They've got deep roots that are going to break up that compacted soil. You know, a lot of times a logging deck, they've been driving equipment all over that thing, so that soil is packed in there. So that's going to help break that up. And it's also got buckwheat and sorghum, which are going to provide organic material that's going to build your topsoil, and it's going to suppress weeds. Then there's also some clovers in there, which recharge the soil with nitrogen and help loosen that soil as well. This is an excellent thing to plant in early summer because not only is it attractive and nutritious for deer, but also it's going to start prepping your soil and building your soil for this fall and even the following fall. So try out Dirt Doctor from Whitetail Hill, plant it for a season or two, get your soil rebuilt, and then you'll have a prime food plot for planning anything that you want. Again, that's Dirt Doctor from Whitetail Hill. Y'all go check it out at whitetailhill.com. Now I'm a southern child, down in Macon, Georgia. Everybody knows where I was born. Well, you're listening to the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast.
Make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. If you'd like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/the Southern Outdoorsman. Now let's get to the episode.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. We are sitting down with the Turkeys for Tomorrow crew. We got Mr. Jim Ronquist here from Rich and Tone Duck Calls. How you doing, man?
I'm good, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Hey, glad to have you here. And we got Chase Grubbs. You're the director of marketing, correct, for
Turkeys for Tomorrow? Yes, sir. I've been involved for about a year now.
Awesome. Okay, so we're going to jump into this. I want to get some background on you fellas, and then I want to get some background on Turkeys for Tomorrow, and we're going to kind of figure out what you guys are doing. And just kind of take it from there. So, Chase, let's start with you. How did you kind of get involved with Turkeys for Tomorrow? Oh, and we got Jacob here. Sorry. He's looking at me.
I'm still here. Super excited to talk to you guys about this. So, Andrew, I'll kind of turn it back over, and we can talk to you and Chase about, you know, kind of your involvement, especially after Turkeys for Tomorrow, you know, was started and how your position kind of came about and kind of, you know, your background coming into this position.
Yep. So I got started in the outdoor industry with Millis Whitetail. I went through their internship program after graduating college in 2020. And I had gone on some trips with those guys and went down to Honey Break, got involved with the Confluence group. And they had said, you know, there's this really great thing going on in the turkey world. And they knew I love turkey hunting, very passionate about it. My dad used to be a competition turkey caller back in the 90s. And I was like, man, I'll reach out. I'll give him a call. And that was Ron Jolly. And Jolly, he answered the phone, first or second ring. I told him my name, who I was, where I was coming from, and what I was hoping to do. And I graduated with a management marketing degree from Virginia Tech. And Jolly's like, man, that's awesome, but we don't have any way to, you know, pay anyone or really a direction on where we're trying to go for the next 5 years. The idea pretty much just started. It was a good phone call. I kind of got a lot of information about what they wanted, and I was like, okay, we'll table this conversation. And he said, yeah, hopefully we can get back to you in a year. Well, it was about a month later, he called me back, and he's like, man, the traction for this thing is taking off. We're going to need somebody, and we're going to need somebody quick. And he's like, we're having something in June. This is mid-April. He's like, can you come down here in June and meet everybody and kind of get involved? And we'll figure something out. He's like, we know we need somebody, and it's getting way bigger than we anticipated. And that was when I went down there and, of course, met all the board members, Jim Ronquist, who we've got on here. And since then, it's been full throttle, full steam ahead. My phone has gone crazy. It's taken off. The social media, just last week, we got 1,200 followers on Instagram and 800 on Facebook in a week, which that's, I mean, pretty fast for...
Daggum.
Yeah.
That ain't no joke.
No, it's taken off, and the donations have been rolling in. Everybody that's donated so far, we appreciate it so much. Our store, we've got a couple items on our store, and that thing's doing well. And we just announced a hunt raffle with Dave Owens, Tyler Jordan, Philip Culpepper, and Preston Pittman. And, man, that thing had raised $3,000 in the first hour, which it was like we sent wow. the button on that to go, and it went.
So. That's awesome, man. So, Jim, let's get into your background.
Yeah, buddy.
How you got into Turkeys for, and really, like, I guess the genesis of Turkeys for Tomorrow.
Mm. Oh, there's a good one right there, genesis. These guys know big words. So,
that's the most syllables I've said today.
You done well. Well, you know, it kind of all started, he mentioned Jolly, and all started, we had a get-together year before last of a bunch of guys that we all used to hunt together, and some of us were Primo's pro staffers and turkey video stuff, and Jolly was a great friend of mine and actually a kind of a mentor that got kind of pushed me to be in the industry a little bit. That being said, we had to get together at White Oak Plantation in Tuskegee and just get together, drink beer, cook fish, tell hunting stories, you know, first part of June, so everybody's done turkey hunting. But one of the things that Jolly wanted to do, and we had a lot of cool people in the room with us, Jim Spencer, Jill Spencer, or Jill Easton, as she's known by, Tess Jolly, David Carden, Coates Head. We had a bunch of pretty well-traveled turkey hunters in the room and wanted to kind of talk about what's going on. You know, every place we go, y'all see it probably more than we do, or as much as anybody being from Alabama, a decline in our turkey populations in a lot of the country, in the Southeast and Midwest. And why? So everybody went to asking different questions. So that kind of led to, you know, we're asking these questions. and to get the right answer, you got to ask the right questions. And that's who a lot of TFT is. So that kind of spawned into a lot of phone calls and conversation about, well, let's just start a Instagram or Facebook page and just kind of be pro turkey and whatnot. And then that kind of said, well, heck, let's start an organization. You know, let's incorporate this deal. And that turned into, well, we got incorporated, and then we found out what we had to do to become a 501c3 organization, and we just kept working on it, and it kind of flattened out and pick up, and we knew at some point in time most of us all have another job and we're going to need some help in somebody, and along comes Chase. So he has been a great help for where this organization currently is and where it's going. But that being said, him and Jolly do a lot of the heavy lifting. I work full-time in the outdoor industry, so I can help some a little bit. But by and large, Jolly and Chase are doing all the heavy lifting right now.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned like working full-time in the outdoor industry. Will you talk about what you do a little bit?
Yeah, man. It's kind of funny. I'm a passionate turkey hunter and a passionate duck hunter also. So I work in the waterfowl world. I work for a company called Rich and Tone Duck Calls, R&T Calls from Stuttgart, Arkansas. Been a past world champion duck caller. Used to blow in turkey calling contest years ago. We produce a TV show that airs on the Sportsman Channel called RNTV. We just finished videoing for our 17th season of RNTV.
Oh, wow.
So that keeps us going. And then, of course, I love turkey hunt, too. So it's a good combination. I like to say duck hunt is my vocation. Turkeys are my avocation. You know, so I like them both equally well. But that's kind of my background. You know, I've spent the last 20-some years run a guide business and then transferring over into working for a call company and designing calls and producing a TV show. But it's turkeys and ducks.
Jim, can you talk a little bit more about the timeline of when Turkeys for Tomorrow was first thought about to where we are today? How long of that progress has it been since the first discussions of Turkeys for Tomorrow?
Yeah, so that would be, we had that first get together at White Oak, I want to say June of 2019. And then we had another get, because we talked about the COVID deal. Yeah, it was June of
2020.
And then June 2020, we started talking about it. We had the big dinner and get together. And just Jolly and I talked on the phone like every night, trying which way we're going to go with this, because we kind of felt we had some good questions. And we're not anti-NWTF at all. And there's a lot of people try to put it in there, but we're a pro turkey. You know, we felt we had an idea of, again, let's ask the right questions to get the right answers. And then how do we go about that? How do we go about trying to make a difference? And then, again, that kind of turned into conversations with an attorney to get incorporated. And I knew had some buddies that said, well, some attorney buddies said, well, we'll listen to you and help you out. Just doing something, trying to help out. And then that turned into becoming 501c3. So that started June of 2020. By March of 2021, we were incorporated, 501c3 certified, registered. I don't know what you call that. And we were off and running. You know, and we had some folks helped us out with a little money here and there. But we didn't really have much of nothing. But we would get some donations along through early 2021. June of 21, we had our annual get-together back at White Oak. We all got to meet Chase and talk about how we could incorporate him, and he's helped drive it since then. And I guess the amount of growth in the past 6 months has been
huge. It's been huge.
Yeah, and the past 4 or 5 weeks have really been the biggest.
Just from the financial side of things, we went from – need money to pay for the next year of the Alabama studies that we're doing to now we're looking at another study in another state. So
yes. And that's something we should get into, the studies we're doing. Kind of one of the fears was in trying to get money and donations. One of the questions I heard a lot, well, that sounds great, guys, but what are you doing? So we had to get something. So our in-house attorney, Carter Weeks, had a relationship with Dr. Will Goolsby from Auburn. And Goolsby's wanting to do some projects. And, you know, there's a lot of conversation out there about turkey reproduction. What are hens going? Where are they going when they breed? What are they doing? So, and then the song meter project. And at first I thought, man, I don't know about, you know, there's been goblin chronology studies go on forever, but it's been all us. We all go sit on a ridge and we count how many turkeys we hear, and we might be drinking coffee, or we might, man, that one's hitting it. Where's one of them? Man, or here's goes a coyote. We're not paying attention. So now if you do this digitally, we can learn more about the timing of gobbling, and maybe that we can offset that with moving the season a little bit by learning more about that. Then the sperm count deal, I think, is very cool. You know, growing up, we all probably thought you shoot a long beard, another long beard is going to take its place breeding hens. You think immediately. And how many times we've been hunting and a Jake's topped a hen decoy? Well, there's been some chatter conversations that they don't think Jake's, or some people think maybe Jake's can't breed. Maybe even a subdominant tom, maybe take him a couple weeks before he's able to breed. We don't know that. So a part of the other study Goolsby's doing is they're going to take a bunch of turkeys and test them and see where they're at. So that's cool. And then the other one is putting GPS on, I thought, was it 50 hens?
50 hens.
Yeah, we're putting GPS.
And we just did
transmitters.
We caught the first hen this past Monday. And that's she's got blood
cool.
work, leg tag, and transmitter backpack on her. So
yeah.
That's already started.
That's cool. And we're going to learn a lot from that because now, one, we're going to see what these hens are doing during the breeding season, where they go to nest, and where they're going with the poults. And that will give us an idea maybe to why we're not seeing recruitment in wild turkeys like we've seen in the 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
Real quick, I want to get more into TFT. I just want to start saying TFT. I like it. Sounds good. TFT. But for Turkeys for Tomorrow, TFT, what is y'all's overall goal as an organization?
Yeah, that's a good one. We're still learning that, but our main goal is to be advocates for the wild turkey.
Yeah, that study, the sperm count study, a friend of mine actually just signed up for that.
Really?
For as being like a leader. I can't remember what they called it, but he's supposed to collect like 20 to 40 carcasses for Dr. Goolsby.
Yes.
So they're going to measure the testes and everything like that.
That sounds pretty interesting.
And the thing with the sawmeter that he didn't necessarily touch on was the sawmeter stuff, a lot of the states like Arkansas, Missouri, they're moving the seasons back. Even Alabama moved the seasons back.
Yep.
Well, they're doing that to try to, you know, there's no research has been done. They're just trying to save turkeys and let them breed a little bit before we get in there and everybody starts pounding them. Well,
yeah. That
sawmeter study is going to say, okay, this is peak gobbling, and you know it's going to lay it out where you're not moving the season just to arbitrarily move the season, because once you lose hunting opportunity, you seldom get it back.
Correct, and that's the last thing we want to do. And there's a lot of people, you know, spring turkey hunting, hearing turkeys gobble, and there's a lot of folks think that, man, you got to start hunting the middle of March, and they'll say, man, I've heard it said they gobbled out by the 1st of May.
Hell yeah.
Well, maybe the 1st of May could be pretty dang good, you know, so maybe we learn that, hey, we can shift it a little bit and allow turkeys to breed more and maybe get a little more recruitment, put some more poults on the ground, and still have plenty of hunter success.
So the thought is that maybe that gobbling kind of is tailing off because of hunting pressure?
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
And so you could potentially move the season back and still get the same amount of gobbling just at a different time.
That's what we're hoping to look at.
Okay.
And the other thing with that hen nesting is those hens, when they're radio collared, radio backpacked, when they get on a nest, we're going to be able to see habitat-wise, are they just nesting in wide open burn? Are they? That's going to be huge, you know, for habitat guys like that are making habitat videos, habitat improvement for state agencies. Hey, this is where they would typically like to be at, what they're nesting in. So our mission statement is we promote America's hunting traditions through conservation, educating through the timeless collaboration of hunters and wildlife professionals to ensure that we all have turkeys for tomorrow. And we took a lot of time and thought into that. And the biggest thing is we want to do everything to benefit the wild turkey, because if you don't have turkeys, you don't have turkey hunters. So when we're looking at stuff, you know, we're doing it for the turkey. Everything is for the turkey. And that's where we kind of dove into.
So you asked, you know, where are we going? What are we doing? What is our mission statement? He just hit it. It's about turkeys, advocating for America's wild turkey and turkey hunters. I'm gonna guess we're going to wind up being more like a Delta waterfowl. I don't know if you're familiar with Delta and Ducks Unlimited. They work together very good. They both do a lot of research, but Delta leans a little more to the research side. I'm going to guess what's going to kind of be us. As we're kind of starting to paint our picture a little bit, working with Goolsby and different research projects. And so it's back to the idea of asking the right questions to get the right answers, and I think that's who TFT is going to be. You know, like Chase just said, a lot of habitat out there, a lot of habitat managers. Let's figure out what the turkey needs and how can we apply that to turkey management.
So if I understand that correctly, so like you've got one organization, so like maybe NWTF in this case, they've got millions.
Oh, and millions of dollars. I mean, look at how good the NWTF does for hunter recruitment, women in the outdoors, different habitat initiatives. They do a great job of what they do.
Hunter education. I mean, look at this event. I mean, this event is for turkeys. The NWTF puts it on every year. This is a great event. It gets everybody in front of it.
It's awesome.
I mean, yeah.
It's fantastic. And we're not trying to go there. But we want to go learn. We want to go see what's making them tick. Why are we losing turkeys? Why aren't turkeys growing? Is it just been the past 4 or 5 years of really bad spring weather in May, about the prime time to hatch? Is that really it? Will a couple hatches fix everything or not? Or do we need to do something else? Is it seed treatment on seed corn? Is it fire ants? You know, what is
it? Is it hogs, you know?
Yeah, there's so many different factors that I'm sure through some of the research projects, that's the, kind of the goal. And that's one thing that's really interesting. Again, I'm coming into this conversation truly here to learn more about you guys, because previously, I think I told both of y'all before coming in, I really haven't, I'll be honest, haven't done a ton of research on you guys and what's been happening. So I'm glad we're able to have this conversation, because I'm learning, just like the listeners are learning right now too, about kind of the goals, but also the format of how y'all are going to go about doing some of these different research projects and focusing solely on that, or majority of the time on that, which is interesting, because just recently we've gotten more involved, like Dr. Chamberlain, some of these other guys that have been doing these studies, and it's so fascinating what's already been done, but also what else is out there that can still be learned upon, because it's just scratching the surface right now. There's so much to be done with, especially wild turkeys, which brings over, Jim, I thought about this. With you coming in from Arkansas, Arkansas is an interesting case study right now you could look at with the it just seems from people I've talked to and what you're seeing on social media, in the media, of huge population losses, what it seems like, over the last, especially 10 years, 15 years. And this was happening, seasoning, shortened and shortened. And, you know, some guys I know that have some pretty good private land haven't had too big of an issue. They're still killing birds. It's not that big. But then you go to just a couple, like a county across, and it's like they're struggling to find a bird to hunt the whole season. And it's crazy what's happening in Arkansas. And there's so many different factors that could be happening there. But I'm glad to kind of see someone coming in from the state of Arkansas like yourself, who's kind of got that, you know, local knowledge of potentially what's happening there, which brings up, where are y'all focusing the most research and your sole focus at this point, you know, so early on TFT?
Yeah. Well, that's really kind of funding related. So right now our first projects is, again, like we said, through Dr. Will Goolsby at Auburn. So it's an Alabama study. It's co-opted with the Alabama Wildlife Federation. The NWTF's involved in it. So we're all going that direction. However, for us, as we grow, we want to go everywhere. So we want to do a project in Arkansas, Mississippi, Missouri, wherever. It's not just the – we started off thinking we're just going to be the Southeast, but I talked to a guy yesterday, said, man, I'm in Pennsylvania. I want to be involved. So our reach is going to get everywhere. We just got to grow big enough and have the funding to be everywhere.
And that's in our bylaws. So anybody that raises $25,000, whatever state that is, they can actually check a box. That research money will stay in their state.
If they so choose it
to be. If they so choose.
Yeah.
So
if not, we want to be able to use it as needed. But if you want to donate $25,000 and stay in Alabama, here you go. We'll go find a place to put it.
Right. Or, I mean, Ohio, anywhere. You want to raise $25,000 or have five companies come together for $25,000, you check that box, that money will stay in your state. So that was something cool we did, put in our bylaws early on.
And I think we haven't had anybody do it yet, but I think it's a very good deal.
Well, that was, hey, when y'all got started, that was a selling point for a lot of folks that I was seeing. A lot of people were extremely excited about that, where they're like, okay, you can do these big donations. You know, we can come together, do a fundraiser. You know, it's like, I don't have $25,000 laying around that I can give people, but you can do fundraisers, you can bring companies together, and you can bring that together and put it where you want it to go. So if you're from Georgia or wherever, you know, you can make that stay in your state. And a lot of people are really excited about that when I first saw y'all kind of come on the scene.
And our five-year plan, talking with Jolly and some of the other guys that are on the board, I mean, we want to take up the whole Southeast. We want to be in Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, Missouri.
And we want to be everywhere.
We want to be everywhere, you know.
But we kind of start from right. The first focus has been the Southeast, or CFWA, Southeastern Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies. That's kind of the beginning part.
I mean, it's where we've seen the most issue lies, down there in the Southeast. We correct. Did a study after the 2021 hunting season, and it was 78% of the people in those southeastern states, they all said, man, we're hearing way less turkeys. I think everybody
pretty
it
much
was 78% of those guys said 25% less turkeys.
So that's an issue, right? So and like Chase said earlier, if we don't have turkeys, we don't have turkey hunters. And that's something, whether it's turkeys, deer, ducks, it doesn't matter. If we don't take care of the wildlife resource that we depend on for our passions and our outdoor recreation, and for some of us our livelihood, that's important. So the resource has to come first, and then you got turkeys, you got turkey hunters.
Can you talk a little bit about the structure of the funding that's happening right now? Like, how are y'all being funded when it comes to donations and stuff? Is it membership-based? Like, how does that work with you guys?
That's a great one. So we just had a meeting two weeks ago. Yeah. So we talked about it when we first incorporated. There's, you got to check off some boxes as you do that if we were going to be a membership or non-membership based organization. We start off non-membership, but we just recently had the meeting to make the change to be a membership based organization. Chase and Kevin Matthews.
Going March 1, we're going to become a membership organization. And that was kind of a decision made just because for stability and able to promise money out to do research projects, you kind of have to have a financial model of what kind of money you're bringing in. Well, if somebody donates $25 this year, you've got no way, if they're not a member, to ask them for that $25 again. So that was just, as we're trying to grow and get more research projects going on, we're like, man, how can we get, you know, a researcher, hey, these are our numbers, this is what we can do, tell us what you want to do. So we, you know, as a need, we're going to become a membership organization on March 1st, which I'm super excited about. Yeah, I think a lot of guys are going to be excited about it.
Yeah, I think that's a good deal. And in other ways, you know, just general donations. We've asked for donations from folks who've given it. We got a gun blast coming up. When's that dinner?
March 3rd.
March 3rd. And that sold out like in 2 weeks. It's going to be like your basic NWTF or DU dinner, you know, gun raffles and whatnot. That is going to be huge for us. The hunt raffles are going to be good. And just in time, we're going to start painting that picture of who we are and how we're going to go about getting money. And other than just basic, hey, man, we need some money, you know.
Well, I was going to say, too, we've had a lot of companies step up and they've wrote checks, and that's been huge. A lot of companies put a lot of faith in us at the very beginning when we really had nothing. They're kind of like, hey, we like the idea you guys have. We think that's a good direction. Here's a check. And that was awesome because that allowed us to get the studies going in Auburn, which it was always kind of a double-edged sword. People wanted to be a part of it, but they wanted to see what you guys were doing. So those companies that allowed us to get those initial research projects going, we want to send out a big thank you to those guys.
And without those guys, we wouldn't be here today. So we're growing, we're getting there, but we're still small, you know, we're still little, and we need money, you know. No way around it. We gotta start getting some money. So the more money we can make or bring in, the more research we can do, and that's kind of the bottom line. We're still kind of painting that picture, you know, still driving that road to answer your question of what are we going to be. We're still kind of defining that, you know. So just y'all hang on for the ride and come back and look in a couple of years, see what it looks like.
Yeah, I just – it's so interesting and kind of like coming from focusing on the research, because to me that is the most fascinating thing with all this. Like, again, NWTF does a great job with the habitat, and they do some research projects too and stuff. But with you guys being able to work with state agencies and, again, start small, and as y'all scale up to be able to scale up the research as well, it's just super interesting just because there's so – again, there's just so much there to learn that just hasn't – that the funding hasn't been there, or this the will and the people, the right leaders to put it in place hasn't been there quite yet to do some of these really in-depth research studies that I know y'all are trying to work on doing. But I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of those research studies. Y'all have kind of mentioned a little bit so far with the especially with the sperm count and everything else, but – These first couple studies, what is the time frames that we're looking at on some of these studies when it comes to from what, the time they're started? Is there any certain time frames they're running before, of course, we're going to have some published data?
So one of the things I'd like to touch on, then I'll let Jim get into it. We partnered with Realtree. Those guys, they've got Realtree Road Trips, Realtree Spring Thunder, and that was one of the things we had asked those guys. Can they come? Can they film some of these research projects as they're happening? So we've got an agreement for a couple episodes, kind of a beginning, then kind of an update when Georgia-Alabama season's open, and then a close of hunting season, kind of end of year, turkey season-wise, wrap up on what the first year found and kind of the data collection. That being said, we've had bait sites out for rocket nets for almost a month now, and like I said, we just captured the first hen this week. They're going to be doing that for the next week and a half, 2 weeks, until they get the amount of hens that we need. I believe it's 50 hens is what we're putting the radio transmitters back on their backs. So that stuff's already started. The song meters, the autonomous recording devices, they're going in trees starting this Monday. I just talked to Will Goolsby last week about that. So he's got a team of researchers. They're going to go out and hang those. So everything's kind of – the ball is rolling. And then you talked a little about the sperm collection. So that's obviously going to be once hunting season opens up. We're going to have hunters bring them to drop sites where they'll harvest everything that they need to do the research. but it's a it's going to be a multi-year project. So, of course, like you said, we're going to try to get information out as it's year to year because people, you know, they want to know where their money's going. Okay, what are you guys finding out? Is there anything you notice right off the bat? So we're going to be sure to have that stuff on our social media. Like I said, Realtree's going to do some videos on it. I know Dave Owens, he's one of our partners. He's going to do a video kind of talking about what's going on. And we're going to just keep it on our website. You know, as Goolsby's writing up these findings for this first year, kind of after year one, we're going to put it out there just because people are content hungry. They want to read what's going on. They want to see where their money's going. And I think if you can kind of see a trend after year one, well, okay, let's start looking for that going into the year two, year three, so that we know, okay, this is the direction we're heading.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing just about the hen study, because I'm real curious on this. What kind of habitat is this area that they are being caught in? Like, what's the diversity of habitat? Is this an area that's mostly pine hardwood mix? Is it mostly pines? Is it mostly, you know, hardwoods? What kind of data do y'all know from the area, the location that these hens are being trapped?
I don't know all the places he's got where he's trying to trap.
I was
going to
say he's got different trap sites
on both public and private ground. Okay. So, and I'm going to say just typical
Alabama habitat,
southeastern Alabama habitat. You know, pine woods, pine hardwood mix, probably some river bottom stuff in there, probably mm-hmm. some rolling upland hill grass country in there.
Interesting. So it's not going to be all on the same property,
not at all.
The reason why I brought that up is,
a great question.
Based off where you're at, some areas, if it's mature pines, there might be very little shrub cover for that quality nesting. So they may be nesting in an area that most other places they wouldn't be nesting because it's too open, but that's the mm-hmm. only thing they
have. That's the only thing they got.
Well, and that's part of the idea of putting the transmitters on them. So where you catch them in, I'm going to say, winter range right now, kind of where they're spending the winter at, is they're still in big groups right now that, you know,
right,
spring
we're catching
break
over
up
corn piles, you know, so shooting that over them as they're getting on the feed.
And as they disperse, as spring moves on, as y'all know, those turkey flocks are going to disperse. So then we'll see where they're going and what they're doing and finding out what kind of habitat they're going to, because they're someplace different now than they will be when they're nesting in April and May. And back to it on the project length, I think that this first three projects together combined are a three-year study. So although we'll get information each year from Goolsby and his crew, the first scientific paper won't be written until after the third year, and once everything's in and done.
One thing to touch back on area, so the goblin chronology study, that's statewide. That's going to be on property statewide.
Yeah, and again, both public and private.
So we're going to get we're painting a pretty broad picture of what's going on in Alabama mm-hmm. after these 3 years. I mean, we're going to have a pretty good scope. Okay, this is nesting, this is gobbling, this is, you know, what's going on.
And we can do that in other states, but I think Alabama will be diverse enough. It'll tell us a lot for
right,
a
it'll
lot
apply
of the
to
country.
That southeast corner, we feel like,
you just bet.
Because of how diverse Alabama is habitat-wise.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Also, too, something to keep in mind, as I say, public and private. You know, a lot of folks say you need to spend all your time on public because that's where folks get to hunt. But you also got to think about there's more private land than there is public land, and we got to bring the private landowner in thinking like we think or wanting to protect that resource. And the better we can educate them, the better off we're going to be. So we got to do stuff on both public and private.
Yeah, and there's way more people that hunt public or hunt private land than public land in the southeast.
Yeah, I mean, Alabama's 93% or something. Like it might be 97. No, it's 97% private land. So that's the case a lot of people make, is if you want to save wild turkeys, if you want to save bobwhite quail, whatever the species, you got to get the private landowners on board.
So that's kind of what you had talked about earlier. With Alabama being mostly private land, that's why we wanted to bring the private landowners in that have noticed they don't have the turkeys that they had 5 years ago, 10 years ago, just so that we can say, hey, you know, it's not a public land issue. It's not just hunters attacking the public lands and hunting those hard the first 2 weeks. These are managed farms that have, you know, thousands of acres in Alabama that don't have the turkeys that they had in years past. So we're trying to figure out what's going on.
I know someone, I know a lot of this research is kind of at the, not the mercy, but it's through the researchers are the ones kind of selecting all this. So y'all are kind of coming up more with the funding and maybe the concept, finding somebody that's willing to do the study. But one private landowner that I'd be very interested, especially with the state of Alabama, which I'm sure would be more than willing to be involved with something like this, is Bent Creek Lodge down there in South Alabama, because they own so many acreage. And, you know, we've interviewed some of their guys in the past, some of the guides down there for turkey hunters, because they're known for world-class turkey hunting on their property and see, especially their guides that's been guiding them for 25 years, how things have changed, you know, analytically or anecdotally for the individual guides, maybe things they've learned or seen change, but also another place to do some of the studies as well, just because they have the acreage and it's so diverse too. So I think it comes down to also some bigger landowners really wanting to get involved in some of this stuff that kind of help, you know, add more diversity to the actual studies.
And there's some of that going on too. Part of the beauty of working with the Alabama Wildlife Federation is exactly what you're talking about, working with some of those large landowners that do have an interest, and that's a whole lot of what the AWF is doing. That's where they're coming from. So I don't know if Will's got anything on Bent Creek, but I know we've talked to the folks. They've talked to the folks at Westervelt and other big landowners, and I don't have all those answers on where they're at, but I know they're trying to get everywhere.
Man, one thing I want to touch on, just throw a shout-out to Will. So Will came to us. He had projects typed up, budget plan. I mean, he came to us with 5 or 6 projects, and he had them completely laid out from the first dotted I to all the way to the last period. And, I mean, it was financial breakdowns. It was what the studies would hope to see. And he's like, I just need the money, man. And so TFT, we kind of spearheaded getting some money raised so that we could do these. So if when researchers come to us like that's awesome, because, you know, it's not – he already knew what he wanted to do. He already had a team put together, and he's like, this is just – we need some funding. And that's where TFT kind of acted as
– kind of a liaison to kind of help head that up and get it going. And now we just want to go do it again, you know, somewhere else and something else, or get with another state and let's go learn something else. What do we need to learn next?
That's fantastic, man. It's so important to stress how expensive those studies are too. Like, there's researchers out there and they want to answer these questions, you know, whatever the question is about reproduction or gobbling or whatever we need to do to help turkeys out. But man, that money's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah, and it's not cheap.
No, sir, it's not. Like, those autonomous recording devices, for the amount of those that we purchased, that's over $30,000. It's
there that quick. And then you got to have people, you know, interns go put it out. And I just was working with a guy at home, Dr. Doug Osborne at University of Arkansas Monticello, on a duck banding deal. And we were talking about they putting some transmitters on, and the interns, they got to pay them. And it takes a lot of money to go do that kind of stuff. But you get a lot back on that research, you know. So the more we can do, the more we can do. You know, it's just that simple.
And so is that one going to be like – I guess one of your main things, are you going to be like looking for researchers to reach out to you guys? Or are you guys looking at questions and then going to researchers in different areas to try to
kind of both?
I was going to say, we'd probably follow both paths.
Yeah.
You know, if researchers came to us and they had something drawn up similar to how Goolsby did, where we could just put our stamp on it and say we're going to push it and get money raised, that's awesome. Or, you know, we're in the process of asking questions.
We may go to, here's what we'd like to find out. Can you help us learn this? Or what do we need to do to figure this out? You know, and then go to a school, go to a state agency, a college, you know, anybody's school of forestry, where all these great wildlife schools are, go to them. That's a great starting point, you know, and then or go to a state agency and then try to look for cooperative money, Pittman Robertson money, wherever it may be, look for people that can help leverage what we got. You know, we want to be able to take 50 cents and turn it into $5. You know, not that you're always able to do that, but you're always going to be looking for ways to do that.
Okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. When it comes to the studies, they get done. What happens next? So now that study is on the ground, what does that – how does that play into actually saving like a wild turkey? Like, well, is so that state agencies and stuff?
Then that moves over to policy and policy advocacy, and that's something we're eventually going to have. So we're going to need somebody to help advocate for policy. And once the research paper is written and you got the scientific paper and you know you've come up with these conclusions, then you got to go through your state agencies, and maybe the policy is that we need to adjust turkey season. Instead of Alabama turkey season opening on March 20th, maybe it needs to be April 1st. Just using that as an example. But then that's a change in policy. So,
well, that's a justification because of research, which is what we're advocating for, is let's move things around based on research. Let's not,
Or not move things around.
Right, exactly.
But you got to have the research paper first. And then if you do need to make changes, that's, again, where you need to go to the different state agencies and affect and see about changing policy.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like with turkeys right now, and quail too, we've been talking about quail a lot lately. We just got bird dogs, so we're all fired up about it. So, but with both of those, there's a lot of it just seems like there's a lot of questions that are unanswered where no one really knows what's going on. And I think there's a lot of frustration coming from that, where we're moving seasons, we're changing bag limits, and people are saying why, and it's hard to give an answer because the research maybe hasn't been done on it.
And there's no Goolsby and I have talked about it. It doesn't seem, as far as turkeys go, when they're range in 49 states, there's no one answer, you know. Mm-hmm. Some areas have hawks, some areas don't have hawks. Some areas have more eggs, some areas don't have eggs. I mean, there's no one answer. So it's like, that's why we're going to need to be countrywide to figure this problem out, is because it's different here, or it's different in the southeast, you know. So
yeah.
And I will say there'll probably be a time we'll have to do identical studies in different areas just to see if there's – if mm-hmm. there's a difference, right? Yeah. See what's going on. Kind of like one of our other board members, Jim Spencer, said, this snake's got many heads, you know. So
absolutely. So, I mean, where do you see turkeys for tomorrow in 10 years?
Man, growing, being a huge advocate for the wild turkey, probably hopefully spearheading lots of different research projects around the country. And by then, hopefully in that 10-year time period, we're going to have different schools and coming to us, hey man, we got a great idea for a project, can you help us get it done? I would hope that we would have a good relationship with all the state agencies, at least in the southeast, and growing up into the Midwest and northeast, all through the turkeys range. I see us growing into being a force, not a force so much as just a voice for the wild turkey.
I mean, it's exciting, and I mean, that again just kind of underscores that these things take time. I mean, you're talking about the Alabama studies. It's going to be 3 years to get the studies done and get them analyzed, and then after that you got to go do the policy thing. So you're looking at changes or not changes, you know, depending on whatever we need to do. We're not really going to know until 3 to 4 years from now.
That's right.
5 years from now, maybe.
So you got to play a hunch a little bit. Yeah. You know, of course, that's not up to us. That goes back to the different state agencies. But they're all kind of making some changes just to kind of see, you know, see, try to get a head start on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a couple things. This, I'm getting more excited about this now. Think about it. You, Chase, saw me do the aha, the little thing earlier.
A Jacob Myers signature right there.
It's that personality, man, just coming out. No, in the excitement.
Yeah, well, you're animated.
Absolutely.
I like it. I like talking to him because of that.
So a couple things. I now, after learning a little bit more about wildlife federations, the different state wildlife federations, and how they work with lobbyists to help mold different potential legislation around all kinds of different things that could happen when it comes to, you know, wildlife, is like with you guys getting to the point, again, working with, you know, some of these different wildlife federations, talking like AWF, Alabama Wildlife Federation, and working with them and their team, once some of these studies come out, is like, hey, is there anything that we do need to push through, you know, when it comes to getting things updated and changed that's more equally based off some of the research at hand, especially when it comes to seasons and stuff like that?
Well, again, that's why you do the research.
Absolutely.
And you write the paper. So then when it's done, you try to decide what did we learn here and how do we apply it?
Mm-hmm.
And how does it make a difference to the wild turkey?
And also makes also one thing I think it's worth touching on. Yeah, there's these studies are going on right now in Alabama, but over the next 3 years, what else? I mean, that's not the only thing y'all are going to be doing in the next 3 years. You're constantly working on potentially different studies happening.
As our fundraising increases, the more projects
and
we'll
that's
be
what I was
do.
Saying earlier was we just got the Alabama projects paid off for the second year. So we are now, look, I mean, we're like, hey, we've got 2 years, we're good to go, the checks are written, and we're ready to go to another state. So that's what I was saying earlier, is now we've already started that wheel kind of turning on where can we go next.
Absolutely. And the more members that, of course, when y'all switch over in March 1st to like the membership based you know, kind of organization, when it comes through, you know, donations and everything, and getting more members on board and that funding increase, then of course that's when, again, y'all can spread out and start working with some of these other states, like we've mentioned earlier. But that's like the exciting thing. This is truly like built from the foundation up by the members and by people that want to get involved with this. Just because, again, you know, y'all are so new, but you're spearheaded with great leaders that all think, you know, with the best, you know, intent for wild turkeys. And like, hey, we are trying to do everything we can right now to figure out, you know, what can we do? What can be done? And that's the exciting thing. Because, again, ever since talking to Dr. Chamberlain, and then we started getting into some deer studies too, not trying to take away from turkeys, but like some of these research studies and GPS studies are so fascinating. Like how much can be learned there, and not only like again understand that species better, but also understand from a hunter's perspective what can be learned about some of those the socialization that happens with some of these different animals, especially when it comes to the wild turkey. So this is going to be extremely fascinating to kind of see over the next few months as things change with you guys for the better, just as y'all continue to grow. Very, very excited to kind of see how this shifts. So.
It's going to be fun. And the hen telemetry deal, I've been watching it in waterfowl world. It paints a picture. And even for turkeys, we'll be able to constantly see where they're at, so it's going to be really fun what we're going to learn and how we'll be able to apply it. And it really, I hope it's nothing but a couple good hatches won't fix it. But why aren't we having those good hatches when we have good weather? So we got to figure all that out. Got a lot to do, but it's fun times to try to get there.
Absolutely. Yeah, man, the one thing I love about the turkey community is you got a lot of people who are real passionate and care a lot about the resource. And I think y'all have seen that with your growth.
So many turkey hunters have stepped up and just come on board.
It's a great community.
It's like you said earlier. I mean, we've got guys, I think the other day, one of our other guys on the board was talking with me, and I believe we have a donation from 48 states that have turkeys.
That's awesome.
So, that's kind of crazy to me, just getting on a year ago and seeing the financials then and seeing it now, and you're like, man, we're going somewhere.
People care, man. And it's exciting. So, speaking of why, you know, people care so much, what are all the, I mean, they need to become a member of Turkeys for Tomorrow.
On March 1, yeah, when we become a membership organization.
Turkeysfortomorrow.org.
We'll probably drop this about the time you guys.
Yeah, that'd be good, man. That'd be awesome.
So, press pause right now. If you're listening to this, pull over on the side of the road, get your phone out, and go join Turkeys for Tomorrow.
That's right. Turkeysfortomorrow.org.
Yes, sir. Is there anything else people can do to kind of help get involved, spread the word about you guys?
I mean, if any of the universities or researchers are listening,
get
something on our desks.
Yeah, come to us, man. Come to us. And spread the word. That's the best thing right now that can happen for us. Sure, we need money, but getting the word out there, getting folks to know us. Who are we? You know, let it get out there. Go to our Facebook page or Instagram page, share it, look at it, be a part.
And that's kind of where we were saying earlier, most of our research, it'll go on our website, we'll have a newsletter going on, but that social media stuff, those are those quick little updates. Like I just posted today on our social media, we caught the first hen. I put some pictures up, the leg band, everything. And so if guys are interested in it, what we're doing, the social media is a great thing to just, hey, real quick, I'm going to be putting updates on there as Dr. Will Goolsbee is texting those to me. So definitely share our stuff on social media, head to the website, join up, become a member, buy some hats, merchandise. All that stuff looks awesome. It was sweet. I've seen some TFT hats walking around. And
I'm digging the hat.
Yeah, the logo is good.
Oh yeah, that looks like a turkey killing hat right there, buddy.
Well, that's what we hope it is.
Yeah. You got anything else, Jacob?
I mean, I've always got things left. I specialize in talking, dude. So
we've got time, and like you said, I mean, I've seen your eyeballs kind of turning from where you earlier.
Yeah, you can see all his light bulbs come on and off.
Yeah, he sat down and he didn't know really anything about Turkeys for Tomorrow. Now I see him; he's thinking about questions.
The things turning, man.
Well, it's just again, it's all just the focus on the research. Like once you've talked to some of these researchers who've done some of this. If it doesn't make you excited and fascinated with what is the potential of some of this potential future research, and also just what's been learned now, that if just with a new set of eyes, you might be able to pick up on some things from pre-existing, especially some of the GPS studies, and be able to learn more from that, especially if you go back. This is okay. I'll run this by you guys. There is a bunch of studies that's been done. I say a bunch of studies. I might be over-exaggerating, but just talking to Dr. Chamberlain, there's been quite a few studies done, GPS studies, which okay, what's the actual term for the backpacks they wear? You said telemetry.
Yeah,
so I keep saying GPS. Really,
it is a GPS. So it's a GPS
transmitter,
radio transmitter backpack is what they are.
So I'm gonna keep it simple, GPS. But there's so many things that's been tracked, especially you know some hens in other locations, but also gobblers and this male turkeys that. To go back and look at some of the data that's already out there with a new set of eyes, with a perspective like, let's look at weather conditions based off, you know, whatever the spring provided during this study, however how many years the study was, and look at, you know, was there any kind of kill-offs or what was the potential observation of you know, brood numbers after the fact with all this data that's already pre-existing, just having a new set of eyes and maybe another researcher that comes in using some of that already published data and seeing based off other conditions that we can go back and look at from that time of the year or whenever those years when that study was taking place and see if there's anything else that can be learned directly through those studies that already exist, that's already sitting there. We just need a new set of eyes to look at.
Because I think it's a wonderful idea.
And I've looked at that because I've talked Dr. Chandler's ears off about this. It's like there's all this data, especially in the deer world, but also turkeys. All this data is out there. They just don't have people to look at it through like the eyes I want to look at it through, which again is a lot of like the weather conditions, a lot of the things that we can go back and look at, you know, what was those conditions back, you know, March 3rd of, you know, 2017 when this study was going on, and how did the turkeys respond to that? And also if there was any observation studies, especially about just the brood numbers and the hatch and what was the quality of the hatch in some of those areas where those studies were done. I mean, it's fascinating, especially just with stuff that's already out there. And just, again, a new set of eyes, I think, could do a
huge
benefit.
That goes back to the funding thing that exists, and you can pull so much out of it, but it costs money to, like, get people to do that, man. It's expensive. I mean, even if you're paying an intern $12 an hour to do it, that racks up.
That's
a lot of work.
Yeah. While you're talking about Chamberlain, he was kind of one of the big – the forces that kind of realized we were going to have a spot in this space. When he and the hunting public got together and they raised that money, $35,000 in 3 days, that was kind of where the light bulb went off in our head. Okay, a lot of people care about research. A lot of people care about wild turkeys. It's just getting it out there so that they can kind of sign up for it and know what's going on. A lot of, like you're saying, state agencies doing research projects or private individuals that are paying to get research done, it's just not getting out in front of the public, whether they don't have a platform or whether it's, you know, just smaller studies that are done. And that's where we're kind of hoping to come in and be an ambassador for that is if a state has done some research and, you know, they're trying to get it out there, I'd love for them to reach out and say, hey, you know, review our research, make sure it's good research, and put it on your website, because there's so many people, that, like you said, that have done the research, done the hard work, and it's just sitting there waiting for eyes to come upon it.
There's a ton of it. And, like, you know, some of these biologists that are the researchers that were part of it, they might go out. I know, like, Dr. Chamberlain and some of his deer stuff, he's done seminars and stuff on. But and some of it's published now. Mississippi State University, they're doing a great job now, I mean, publishing stuff on social media, which is great because you're reaching that audience and getting people involved. But I'm telling you, people are so fascinated with the GPS data from whether it's deer, turkeys, it doesn't matter, but especially for turkeys, they're so fascinated with it that there's a huge aspect to be able to connect more people where they can visually see what is this bird doing through its life cycle for this 3 years this study is happening.
Well, look at Dr. Chamberlain's Turkey Tuesdays. That was something that he started the other year, and I remember seeing him when they first began. He was getting 200 likes, 300 likes on them, and now he's getting like 2,200 likes. Like, a couple of them are 3,700 and upwards. You know, they go up into the thousands, so that's just getting shared, and people are reading it, and that's something that's awesome, and I read those every week. So it's like if we could just – the researchers that are doing the research, if they can get that information out there for the public to see, it's obviously desirable.
Yeah, and it takes people like Dr. Chamberlain, too, because he's so talented at taking a very complicated study and putting it to where, like, I can understand it on Instagram. You know, making it accessible for everybody to be able to go and read that. Because, I mean, you get into some scientific jargon in these papers.
Yeah, you don't want to read that.
It's tough, man. Yeah.
That's Dr. Goolsby, too. That's what I was saying. When he presented the studies to us that he wanted to do through Auburn, that seven-page thing that he had stapled together, when I read through it, I understood every word. And I'm sure that there are other versions of the seven-page paper that were written in the more scientific jargon.
Probably 35 pages at that
probably
point.
35 pages, not for marketing and management students.
Now, Andrew, we got our hands on some data from a GPS. It was a deer study, GPS collar study that they did at Auburn on some public land. And some was private land, too. And Andrew actually got the
GPS points.
That's Andrew's background. I was building maps
GIS.
And GIS.
I went to the School of Forestry at Auburn. And when I was there, they were doing that study. And I was like, man, oh my gosh, I'd like to get my hands on that. I'd love to see what it looks like. Because I'm curious.
But being able to build the maps out, like Andrew sitting down and building out the maps with all the data points and be able to do the transitions and showing that to the audience.
Yeah, click through day by day, hour by hour.
People were so willing to just learn more. When they could see that, like a progression of, like, just in this example, it was a few different bucks and how they shifted throughout the season and shifted it throughout the rut in their home range and everything.
Man, I mean, that stuff is so interesting. And it's like, we could do videos on that stuff, like 15-minute videos. You look at Grant Woods.
Oh, it'll blow up.
He's making videos on habitat for turkeys and dude, it's like if we can just get that stuff in front of people's eyes, it's going to blow up because so many people are curious. The private landowners want to know, well, if I'm planting this food plot for this turkey or this hen, is it going to stay on me or is this buck going to stay on me?
How are they using it? That's what it shows. Is like, how are they using the terrain? And what's better yet, this is what we've been trying to do with this deer study, is I'm wanting to go after this deer study. Went from like 2014 to 16 or 17? And I told Andrew I wanted to go out because we had the data points. Andrew was able to put it onto the map and everything and make it interactive, but go out and show people on our end of what it looks like on the ground, that what these deer were using. Now, of course, we've had a few growing seasons since then, so it's going to shift a little bit. But the same thing, like with you guys and some of these studies, is going out there and showing, if you could do video content, showing like the interactive map of a couple different hens and as they shift around throughout that spring home range and all into the summer with the broods, and then go out there and film, okay, this is roughly the general area they were nested at. This is the kind of the general area that they were feeding at, and kind of that circle that kind of that they were kind of going through that pattern to show how they were using the land, how they're using the habitat to their advantage in the different areas that some of those studies are being take place. I think people would eat that up because they can visually see exactly how these birds are using that landscape.
And that's kind of the plan for this summer. When I was talking to Dr. Goolsby early on, he was saying, you know, after year one, we need to get something out just so people continue to fund us and are interested in. And that's kind of one of the things we had talked about was, hey, how about let's go out there. Some of those data points that we pulled from that first year, let's go out there, check them out, and shoot some video content, because video content now it's so powerful. I know our page, we don't do enough of it, but it's hard because we are so small still. But the stuff that we have done video content-wise, I mean, it blows up. People are interested to hear about that stuff, which, like I said, it's crazy that the research has taken on this side of things and people are so far behind it. It's like the sperm count study we're doing. Why do we not know? It's how many years have we hunted turkeys, and it's always been assumed that you shoot the adult boss, the dominant boss gobbler. Well, another one's just going to step right up. And now it's like, maybe we don't know.
Maybe not. But we're going to find out anyway.
And it's like, how many years have we, you know, I'm sure there's been similar research done, but it's like, it hasn't really been public. It's not public knowledge.
Yeah, if it's out there, then yeah, they did a terrible job with PR trying to get it and let people know. But that's the problem with some of these studies is, like, unless you have like the guys, you know, you have the Michael Chamberlains of the world, which there's not many. I mean, Michael Chamberlain stands alone, but you know, the other researchers, again, at Mississippi State that really are trying to push this stuff, nobody knows about it. It gets published, you might hear about for a little bit, and then it gets just filed away until someone brings it back up, like that deer study that Andrew talked about when he was at
probably
Auburn.
Something else I think TFT will be a part of as we start to get this information. We help try to get it out there.
I think there's just so much so many people out there that are just hungry for this knowledge, and they're hungry for the visual aspect of some of these different studies, especially when we're talking the GPS studies, or even not even that. I'm telling you, interactive grass, interactive concepts of some of these research studies, we're not just publishing a paper where someone has to read through it, but you're simplifying it for the common, you know, follower, listener, audience member. That's how you're going to keep people more engaged, that's the way I look at it too. It's the same thing like with what we do with the show. That's how you keep people engaged, but keep people excited about what's happening, and they don't get bored like, oh, well, cool, they publish a paper, but, you know, I know y'all are going to do a really good job with that, breaking stuff down.
The goal you talked about, where are we at in 10 years, where are we at in 5 years? So on the marketing side of things, I get to talk to our website guys a lot, and that's kind of one thing that we've had a lot of talks with for how we're going to move forward on our website. Our website in 5 years, I'm hoping it's an encyclopedia for guys that care about turkeys, turkey habitat. I know some of the articles, like you've already mentioned, we've already kind of dove in and started looking at those for, okay, what research that's already been done can we put on our website just so people can read through it and see these are the findings, this is the areas that it's already been done. And that's, I mean, I think for us to stay relevant, we're going to have to publish information from researchers that's already been done just so that we can build upon it, because there's no reason to spend turkey hunters' hard-earned money on a project that was done in the state, you know, maybe a bordering state, similar habitat, but just not talked about. So we've already kind of dove into that just to try to get a tab on our website that people can go in and explore it. Pie charts, graphs, not just 35-page research papers with words that you have to go to Google to figure out what they mean every other sentence.
That's exciting, man. The digestibility of it's huge. It's huge. I think it'll get more people involved, more people fired up, more people informed. You know?
And that's the bottom line. The more people that are informed and educated, they want to help out more. You know, And again, we'll hit all those points as we grow. You know, and we'll kind of see which way we go. But I think research, education, that's kind of going to be a good direction for us to go to.
We feel like that's a good niche.
Yeah.
We feel like we're going to belong.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We feel like that's where we're going to belong.
Probably overdue in the turkey world.
Not to take any fire away from you guys, but I wish someone would exclusively do it in the deer world. Like, there's a lot there. There's a lot there. So I don't know if y'all ever want to start another branch of what y'all are doing, but listen, call me up, dude, if y'all need somebody. Oh, man, that gets me so excited just because, again, like you said, when it's easily digestible, if it doesn't get somebody excited about some of the studies and actually, again, seeing some of the data come in, man, you need to check yourself. Like, if you're just going out there just to kill something, just to kill it, man, you're not really caring about, like...
You're in it for the wrong reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many interesting aspects that can be learned that, again, we're just scratching the surface. And that's the exciting thing for years to come, especially with y'all's growth and everything else. There's a lot there that can be published and hopefully, again, some answers found in the next years to come, whether it's in 2 years or 10 years or whenever we start having some ideas of what are some of these factors that are, again, hurting some of these turkey populations in different areas. Because that's really the biggest picture. I mean, trying to figure out, what's working, what's not working, especially with management practices. And is there anything that we can do to better help, wild turkeys?
Jim painted a great picture of where we were trying to be in 5 years. I mean, we want to be an advocacy group for turkey hunters about the wild turkey, based off of research. We want everything that we're saying to be research based. We don't want there to be a loss of opportunity unless the research says, hey, we've got to make these changes. And I know some states where they're seeing less turkeys, they're having to, almost pump the brakes and make drastic changes right now, and they don't have the funding to do research. So that's where it's a double-edged sword for us. We need the funding to kind of get into these states and take on a project to kind of answer the questions, but it's also like, well, if that state doesn't do something, they're worried, we don't have 2 years to wait, because if we keep what we're doing right now, our resources are going to be in dire need.
An interesting conversation that you guys need to have is with the guys from Land and Legacy. Have y'all talked to them yet? Land and Legacy podcast. So they're all about their habitat managers, like private firm habitat managers working with private individuals or private.
Are they here this week?
Yeah, they're awesome, dude. Really good guys. It's Matt and Chad, and then Adam wasn't able to show up. He's got a kid that just got born. It was just born, so he's at home with his wife.
He just got born.
Like, that's why he couldn't come to the interview. Kid getting born.
Shower.
That's Alabama Echo Academy.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Man, I thought we taught him better than that up there.
So on Chad and Adam's farms, about 800 acres total in Missouri, like in the Ozark Mountains of Missouri, they did extensive tree reduction on the property. It was a cattle farm. It was a oak hardwood mixed forest on an active cattle farm, and they did an extensive removal of timber on the property to have more recessional growth. And they do a ton of prescribed fires, and they stopped trapping. Okay, and they didn't stop trapping just to stop trapping. They were so busy with clients and stuff,
right.
And just to add so much more habitat and quality nesting habitat and forage habitat, they saw a noticeable within 3 years spike of turkeys on the property. Now, of course, this is anecdotal on this one property. Huge spike on turkeys, and they could talk to you about it. It's a very interesting conversation. Actually, I want to interview them a little bit later about this. But, and it's nothing against not trapping, but it's like you had so much more air that these turkeys could nest.
Right.
It was so much harder for a nest or a predator to find them.
That's where we say, like, it's not one answer.
Absolutely.
The guys that are trapping if you have 40 acres and you're not burning it and you're in another area of the country, obviously trapping is,
trapping is never bad.
Trapping is never bad.
No,
exactly. And
never.
I know Dave, he gave me a call last week, and he's saying, hey, man, can you share that stuff about the trapping in Georgia all year round? And I'm like, of course, dude. Anything that's going to benefit turkeys, we'll for sure share. But it's like it's so many just different folds you can get into to
death by a thousand cuts.
Okay, we gotta get back to this, because we talk a whole point about the whole point of this topic, but this is what gets me fired, especially having this bird dog, because I didn't get a bird dog to go hunt pin-raised quail. Not interested at all. Like, it's wild birds.
Well,
okay?
We used to have John Byrne turkey dogs. And
dude, for like fall turkey hunting?
Yeah, fall turkey
hunting. Oh, dude.
I grew up doing that. I did that all over, the East Coast.
Dude, you just don't tell us? I would do an episode on that. That'd be awesome.
Like, John Byrne turkey dogs, man, those things, obviously you have to work with them, but just that bloodline, oh my goodness. You could, dude, walking around in the woods, they're making figure eights out in front of you. You got hens and some of the stuff I grew up, I'm like, man, I was spoiled.
That's good stuff. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
But I don't even know where I was kind of going with that. But there's those guys and kind of what they've done on their property, it was just interesting. And I'm just curious, again, so many people – this is what I was trying to get at. I'm now super fired up about the habitat aspect, okay?
And like, habitat's important.
And bringing it back in areas that – it was native is bringing back more of those grasslands, because it's got so many more species it can hold in these grassland areas and savanna areas versus close canopy timber. It looks pretty to hunt some close canopy oak hardwood forest, but only offers so much food throughout the whole year in security cover. And opening these areas up and what can be done with some of these habitats with a rebound, and some very quickly and then some over multiple years.
It depends on what you're trying to manage too.
Absolutely.
And you know,
absolutely.
Too, I'm sure with all the quail managers you've talked to or have gotten into the quail stuff, managing for quail is like the best management practices for all wildlife. Mm-hmm. So many guys like Goolsby, Ted DeVos, mm-hmm. he was saying, you know, if you can set your property up to have quail on it, you will probably have good turkey numbers and you'll have good deer cover. So, I mean, quail are important, and that's why there's states that have kind of hit the panic button on the wild bobwhite quail is... You know, we don't ever want turkeys to get to that point, because they're scratching their head like, man, where did we go wrong?
Yeah, where did we go wrong? I grew up, my dad was a big bird hunter. We grew up with bird dogs. That was his passion. And now they're just not any. You know, you hear a covey birds, you just sit and listen or watch. You know, it's pretty cool.
Absolutely. And we're starting to have a rebound with them in Alabama on some public land that we hunt on, where you can actually go out there and actively hunt them and hunt, you know.
Not walk all day pointlessly through the woods.
Yeah, and hunt a huntable population, but it's still like, I hear all these stories from some of these guys that are in their 80s about what they were doing back in the 60s, growing up in like the 60s and hunting with their dad and stuff, and that's all they did. But it was a totally different landscape. You didn't have these in the deep south where we're at in Alabama, all these huge pine plantations. It was a lot more mixed forest and smaller properties that had a lot more of that open cover.
Old homesteads.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's totally different. But just to kind of get back on this, we got sidetracked about the hogs, but talking about, I'll let you kind of... What were we bringing up? Talking about the goblin? Oh, on hog properties, yeah.
Right, so I was just going to say, before we got off here, I just wanted to go in and kind of give thanks to the Alabama Farmers Federation. Those guys stepped up, and they had done extensive hog removal on a couple properties in Alabama, and they knew we were going to hang song meters, and they're like, hey, hogs are important. Guys care a lot about hogs on their property and getting them removed. So they came in, and they're saying, why don't you guys do goblin chronology studies and hang some song meters on properties that have had extensive hog removal where there's a less amount of hogs than, you know, a neighboring property, and kind of see what effect do hogs have on goblin. You know, hogs rooting around all night long, turkeys constantly getting pushed around by a big hog population. So that's going to be super exciting. That's another fold into those Alabama research projects where we're going to kind of paint the whole picture of what's going on in Alabama. So I'm super excited for that stuff, and I know Dr. Goolsby is as well.
Absolutely. Awesome.
That'll be interesting stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Well,
can't wait to see what comes of that.
Yeah.
Well, again, I mean, you guys are going to have us on. We'll have to be on this summer for sure, just so we can kind of say, okay, that's year one.
Have a wrap up. That, you know, see what we found out.
Updates. We're going to have there's going to be a regular occurrence.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask this one more time. Do y'all have anything else y'all want to mention? Anything else we want to plug? Of course, if anybody's interested in TFT, where would they go about getting find more information, getting involved, and just staying in
turkeysfortomorrow.org.
TurkeysForTomorrow.org.
On social media, Twitter, the whole nine yards?
Turkeys for Tomorrow on all the social media. On Twitter, I believe it's For Turkeys.
Okay.
It is.
Yeah. So check us out. Definitely, if you're able and willing, join up, become a member. We also are going to have a donate tab just on our website. So, you know, no amount's too little and no amount's too large.
Excellent.
Awesome. You want to give it, we'll take it.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate y'all coming on. Guys, make sure you tune in for our next episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. And as Michael Pike would normally always say, y'all stay Southern.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes coming out, and help us grow the community by sharing this podcast with a friend.
All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck. And I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with OnX Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic. And no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find basher groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code SOUTHERN10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com.